Welcome to the NBA Coast to Coast podcast brought to you by thelines.com. Coming to you from the West Coast, Josh Lander, joined by Nate Weitzer. He's on the East Coast. And we are looking at another day of NBA playoff action here on Monday night. Got some game twos in the works for you. We're going to be taking a look at best bets in this video. Also got a Strictly Player Props video up in a separate episode as well. So make sure to subscribe to that page and continue to follow along with us all season up. Postseason, I should say, long as we move forward here. Also want you to head to thelines.com and use everything we have up on the site right now to help you out with these NBA bets you're making, including that prop finder tool that helps you get the best odds available to you from all these books giving us these bets. Nate, let's go ahead and get into your first pick here, something we're both looking at in that Cavs and Magic game, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs are so happy to not be playing the New York Knicks in the playoffs, and nobody is happier than Jared Allen, who's not getting tossed around by a healthy Mitchell Robinson like he was last playoffs. In fact, he's doing the bullying of this young Orlando team. So I will take just 10 rebounds in a win for Jared Allen is even money. I mean, the double-double will get you plus odds. I think you can probably look at 12 rebounds for you know, maybe ladder that up, because we are talking about 18 rebounds in game one on 31 rebound chances, and he only deferred one. So he is out there eating glass. Like, Jonathan Isaac is awesome, but starting him at center might have contributed to that in terms of Allen just being able to grab every defensive rebound. And obviously Orlando's horrendous offense is going to contribute to that. I mean, maybe they won't shoot 32 and 21% again, but I mean, they're not going to be scoring in the paint very consistently against this team. We highlighted going into that game why the under was live, because they wouldn't really be able to score from the perimeter. They haven't all year, and you're not going to get paint points against this Cavs team when they're locked in. Paolo, 9 turnovers is something that should regress. Only 17 field goal attempts to at least getting shots up, more missed shots, more rebounding opportunities. I don't know where Jalen Suggs got his bravado to shoot 16 times, but 4 for 16, you tell me, like, that's going to regress positively, like maybe a little bit, but he's not a good shooter. Cole Anthony, Markelle Fultz going over. Yeah, I mean, in any case, there's going to be plenty of rebound chances in this game. In the regular season, Allen averaged about 10 boards on 15 rebound chances against them. 2.3 contested offensive rebounds per game on 6 chances. So he was getting it done on both ends. He has double-digit boards in 5 straight home games against the Orlando Magic and a double-double in 4 of those. And just like the Cavs here, I mean, Donnie looked pretty good and definitely engaged, and they all looked like they were very much trying to put the bad taste of last year's playoffs behind them, be the bully instead of being bullied. And so I think the Cavs are gonna go up 2-0 here.
Fair point. I mean, you know, my thing that we were talking about earlier is that I'm a little bit weary of just being like, well, this just happened, it's gonna happen again. That all that said, for Jared Allen's boards, like, that's a no-brainer, because even if those rebound chances go down by 10 and he's at 21 rebound chances, do you not like him to get 11 boards in that situation with, like, his better than 55% rebound chance success rate? I mean, it bodes to that he would continue to get those rebounds. As far as the Cavs, like, I don't disagree. Like, this could easily be a sweep or a gentleman's sweep if the Magic are as ill-prepared from a just sort of like individual player standpoint. Not really, like, you know, they did anything wrong. Mosley definitely didn't do anything wrong necessarily, although I think he needs to be playing some offensive minded players a little bit more. And I know he put Jonathan Isaac into that lineup at the end, but that just continues to bode well for Jared Allen. Like, if his matchup is Jonathan Isaac for 28 minutes, that's like, what, like 4 inches and, like, you know, probably like a good 45 pounds that he's got at that point. So I'll go ahead and keep taking Jared Allen to just be standing under the rim and dominating down low. And yeah, maybe there is a little bit of, like, you know, I'm not going out like I went out last year against that Knicks squad for Jay Allen. So we're both all over his rebounds continuing. At 11.5 is where you're gonna have to grab this. I think there might be 110.5 left if you want just the core bet without any kind of parlay. But the 10 plus and getting that all the way back to basically even money for him to just get 10 with the dub for that team. I like where your head's at with that one. My bet here is going to be in that Knicks game for the first one. And I'm taking an under in 209.5. And look, I actually took the over, if you'll remember, here in this last game. A couple things, though. One, Joel Embiid was definitely a little bit healthier for that game than I think we can assume he's going to be in this one, which is not going to bode well for offense in general, even though I still think that they're probably good to get their team total of like 101.5 or so. I still don't think that like the Knicks are going to shoot 40-something% from deep again. That's really what this bet is heavily predicated on, is like, look, Joel hobbled, he's still doing his thing on defense, right? Like they're still dominating the paint. They're still sort of winning out they're not winning the rebound battle because the Knicks are crashing with like four dudes every single time a shot goes up, but he is still limiting their shots in the paint is what's key here. And he's still keeping them away from the basket on defense. So it's really his offense that seems to be suffering when he's hurt the way that he is, right? And had to come out. So I'm still going to ride with his defense being a huge part of this game and impacting it a ton. And like I said, for the Knicks, a lot of those shots were contested that they took. Unlike the Magic, by the way, who, if you go to the uncontested field goals for that team, they actually shot 12 of 51. 12 of 51 on what the NBA considers uncontested field goals. This Knicks team was taking some decently covered shots and still making all those threes. 3 for 6 for Bogey, 4 for 8 for Dante DiVincenzo. Miles McBride hit a couple. Josh Hart hit it. Like, yeah, they were just all over the place with that, man. And I don't think you can depend on that. Philly's 3-point defense is very good. And this Knicks team really is a jump shooting team at this point. And if they don't get offensive rebounds, they don't really get into the paint and score from there anymore. That was really Julius Randle doing the bulk of that work. And even in the paint, they may be a little bit more in the extended paint and the mid range, but not once you get down inside of 5 feet or so around that restricted area. It ain't going to be there for them. That's for sure. And I'm just not going to bank on them being that good of a jump shooting team 2 games in a row like this against a really good jump shooting defense for this Philadelphia 76ers team. So the pace, 89 pace last time, ain't no reason to think that's going to go up. That usually you see games 1 and games 2 with the faster paces. And maybe game 2 still is around 90, 91, let's say, but I don't think that thing's making it up to 95, 96, the way that these two teams just want to play in the half court. The Knicks got a decent amount of rebounds. A decent amount of fast breaks off of their defensive rebounds. I will say that. And, you know, Philly has been a good transition defense and will need to really focus on that a little bit more than maybe they have in the past. But yeah, either way, like I just don't like points coming in this game. I kind of felt like I stole one in the last one, taking it over at 214.5. And a lot of stuff in that fourth quarter really helped me get up there for sure. Like a lot of free throws coming in that game as well by the end, which it was a slobber knocker in the first part of the game. And then they started calling it a little bit more at the end. But you're also just going to see like Joel and the refs not want him to get taken out, I don't think. So you're probably not going to get very many foul calls on him, that kind of stuff moving. That's kind of where my brain's at as well with this game.
Yeah, I mean, they held the Sixers to, 79 points in consecutive meetings when they didn't have Embiid. So if he's not good to go, like, yeah, I would not expect the Sixers to hold up their end of the bargain against this really physical, good defense. And they did a great job on Brunson. I mean, everyone's expecting him to bounce back and probably score about 30, but that's probably comes with Nick Nurse making adjustments defensively too, to like Brunson was able to spray the ball out to these shooters to get great looks. Right. And I mean, maybe he gets his, but the Knicks offense is not as effective as a whole as it was in game 1. So yeah, definitely lean towards the under here. If you feel like you got away with one in game 1,
I do.
Time to zag the other way. So yeah, game 1 in Denver, are we going to see the exact same thing? Perhaps, but I'm taking the fourth quarter spread here for the Nuggets. -1.5 is even money. And I mean, I haven't seen a second half spread. I mean, you can just live bet that potentially. But I mean, there's two scenarios that I think you can see this play out, which is basically similar to what we saw in game 1, which is the Nuggets just separated mostly in the third quarter. They actually tied the fourth. Or similar to what we saw, you know, when these teams have gotten together in the regular season and in the Western Conference Finals last year, which is the Nuggets just completely separate at the end because their execution is flawless and because the Lakers are less balanced and way more dependent on two guys who have a ton of mileage and can wear down the stretch. So they outscored the Lakers by 10, 4, and 5 points in these regular season wins this year. In games 2 and 3 last year, they outscored them by 8 and 9 in the fourth quarter. I mean, this is the most clutch team in the NBA. And in a sense, I mean, since the All-Star break, they have the best defense in the fourth quarter at home. They have a 100 defensive rating, allowing a league low 11 paint points. And they shut down the Lakers going inside, only 20 paint points in the second half in game 1. You know, and the tired legs, like D'Lo still can't hit shots against this team. They just have such good perimeter defenders. I mean, give them some credit. Also, the free throw rate seems to drop for the Lakers down the stretch in the fourth quarter versus what they do when they're aggressive early with LeBron leading the way. Denver, their free throw rate goes up in the playoffs at home. I mean, you look at last year, they had the fifth highest free throw rate in the fourth quarter at home, and obviously the best effective field goal rate with Joker spraying the ball out. So, I mean, that scenario one is just like more of what we've seen. I think there's scenario two here, which is just the Nuggets roll in the first half and they're up big, and then the Lakers let go of the rope, because this would now be 10 straight losses. And like, you're not winning in Denver. They haven't won in Denver in 4 years, I believe. LeBron hasn't. And like, all right, pack it in. And like, maybe we can hold serve at home, but like, we just cannot beat this team. And then you're depending on like, will Mike Malone keep the starters in deep into the fourth quarter? Like, usually in a playoff game, unless it's like 30 plus points, they will be out there. And I mean, you even look at these lineups though. Like, I mean, the Lakers have better bench players at face value, I guess. I can't even say that for sure, but if you look at the lineups, like without Bron post All-Star break, their two most common lineups, -8, -27 net. Denver's most common lineups without the Joker at home being the key, like they're big negative on the road, but at home +46 and +63 net. So Peyton Watson and Julian Strother finishing this game, it could just be piling on, because like I said, Lakers might just be like, okay, on to game three and maybe not getting swept.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you would prefer the Lakers sort of coming out strong, right? In that scenario where they kind of come out and don't let, which they did last year. Like, if the Lakers get swept in the same exact fashion they did last year, where it was like, you know, it really was. It sounds silly because we always, you know, public likes to defend the Lakers and they're everybody's, you know, favorite team who's just a casual fan, for instance. But like, really, like, that really was the best sweep of a team that ever got swept. I would have to imagine, like, they looked the best of any team that's gotten swept. And it's because in part they came out in the next couple games that they still lost after game one, took a beat down, came back. We're up in game two. We're up in game three. Like, it was the same scenario. And that Nuggets team was just like, basically just representing Jokic just loafing around until the backs were against the wall. And it was like, okay, now I'll be the best player in the league, I guess.
He is inevitable.
And take over. Yep. Yeah, he is inevitable. There's a really, really good storyline about that moving forward right now, where Joker's just coming in quietly and doing his thing. But I'm going to close it out here with Max Strus over 9.5 points. I'm doing my cheating thing where I'm not taking a side or a total, because the only one I feel good about is that under, honestly. But the stuff here for Strus, I wanted to sneak in an extra player prop because I really like Strus in this match once again. Now, I considered an under him for him in game one, and really it's like I said, I'm kind of zagging after a zig, and so the 9.5 points for him now is at even money. So it's the same prop that it was in this past game. He had 5 points in the first quarter and then only took a few shots after that, and they didn't really need him as much, and they dominated the paint and they dominated pretty much the entirety of that game, especially on defense, and just didn't really rely on him. Thing is, he's guarding Franz Wagner, so he's going to keep getting minutes. It has been determined that he is the number one defender for him, played 32 and a half minutes and really mirrored a lot of his time on the floor with Franz, and was like, nobody guarded him for like a minute as the primary defender, and dude, Strus was on him for the majority of the time that he's on the floor. So there's that. There's the fact that, like, I think a big part of this sort of like coming back from where he was at in this matchup is going to be Strus taking a few more shots. Like, 8 shots is what he took in this last game, but when he plays 30 minutes on the season, at least 30 minutes, not even 32, the 30 plus minutes, he normally takes 11 shots. So in all the games that he's played at least 30 minutes this season, he's averaging like 11 and a half shots per game. So I think the shots will go up. I think it just really was a situation where it was like, well, we're good. Like, we're not even taking threes because we're just getting everything we want from down low. And the threes were not going in for the Cavs in this last game, which I don't know that it's necessarily going to get that much better for them. But I do think that at the very least, like, they have to sell out on Donnie a little bit more. Like, you can't let him drop 30 like the with the ease that it seemed like he did in that last one. He got so many open shots above the break that it became a walk in the park for him during the rest of the game. So that's a big part of where I start with Strus, is like, I think he's going to be somewhat of an outlet as the defense kind of gives a little bit more pressure to Donnie Mitchell and even to Darius Garland a little bit, who they definitely are making sure that he's kind of the point guard at this point. Like, he's definitely the clear cut point guard, I would say, is Darius Garland at this point, which it should also help Strus get some of those assists off of that pressure that Orlando really plays on the ball handler in the pick and roll. Right. So if they are going to pressure that up, I think he's going to be good for more like 10 field goals in the 32 minutes that he's playing. And that's really what I'm banking this on. So, and honestly, when he's gotten the 30 plus minutes this season, he's over 9.5 points in 14 out of the 18 games that he's played that many minutes, right? And this team ran a really deep rotation for everybody not named Donnie Mitchell or Darius Garland. When they have everybody, they run a really deep team, and they're still going to keep it to like eight dudes. You know, they still run maybe a little bit bigger than like a Tibbs, for instance. But that does keep him in there for minutes, keeps him in there for the need for offense, as well as one of the few shooters that can play off of Donnie and Darius Garland at this point. Caris LeVert, not necessarily that going to be that. He's more of the point guard for the second unit at this point, and they're really using him in that sense. So he's not coming in taking anything from Strus. There's no reason to think that he's not going to keep getting that, like I said, 30 to 33 minutes, 35 minutes at times when he's the best defender on Franz. Then you add the norm. Like, I think this was a little bit of an outlier for the context of him getting that many minutes and the amount of shots that he took. So I'm going to bank on that kind of reversing back to the norm here in this one.
Yeah, interesting that he's not necessarily a spot up 3-point shooter, that he's been able to put the ball on the floor and make a lot of plays this year. And looking at against the Magic, right, 17.5 points and 6 assists in both home games against this Magic team. So they run him off the line as they are aggressive. You know, he only got off a few 3-point attempts in one of those. I mean, he went 4-for-8 from deep in the other ones, but not any value on him hitting 2 threes here. But I mean, the same thing is juice for him to have 3 assists. But yeah, maybe a little Max Strus parlay action then for like a 10-3 and 2 threes, and then you're getting some plus money. But I mean, he's a good all around player. Like, it just seems to be undervalued as what he's bringing to this Cavs team.
That's how I see it. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be kind of what I'm looking for here, is just like, all right, well, I'm going to put myself in the coach's shoes and be like, what worked and what didn't work? I think Max Strus worked, and so we're going to continue to see the volume from him, and that's what I'm banking on. But Nate, let's go ahead and get right into your first NBA player prop for Monday night.
My first? Your first? Our first. Great minds, great minds. We both, without talking, we both put down Joel Embiid to go over 8.5 points in the first quarter only. I mean, you can ladder it one more point to get plus 120 at DraftKings, because basically, I mean, Embiid, he's not a guy who's like, I'm going to let the game come to me. We know what his game is, especially with limited mobility. His game is, I'm going to shoot the ball. I'm either getting to the line or I may make plays if I draw a double team. But I mean, the Knicks, their strategy, they had a lot of success with Mitch Rob individually covering him. And I think we're just going to see more of that. I don't think Tibbs is going to throw that many doubles at him, but it's more just about how aggressive he comes out, right? 15 points in the first quarter, played all 12 minutes in game one. That's actually the fifth straight playoff game where he played, sixth straight, where he played the entire first quarter, all of them against Boston. In the playoffs down the stretch there, he had 12, 12, and 11 in those first three, and then he ran out of gas in game 6 and 7, which we know very well. And, I mean, he's probably going to run out of gas in the second half here. He just doesn't have the wind. I mean, he got injured in game one, which definitely affects it. But I mean, he went 6-for-11 in the first half. And then what was it? He's now shot 25% or worse in the second half of 5 of his last 10 playoff games, basically. Like, he cannot sustain it. Like, it's just, but I mean, he's continued to take a lot of threes, which is interesting too. Like, I was thrown in there, like, for him to hit 2 threes, it's minus 120. But I mean, it's just like, you're not going to bother his release. I mean, even if he has limited mobility again, like, he's going to walk around, get to his spots, and just take shots. And I think he's going to be a little bit more reliable. Like, he's just not going to miss those open shots as much and finish 8-for-22. But I mean, again, we're just really talking about the start here and him just coming out and getting 10 early, setting the tone.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. We are all over this, in the same way, the stuff for him this season, like you really nailed the motivation, right. And why he would be doing this. We both looked at the last three versus this team that he played against the Knicks all season and the way that he kind of comes out, but really just on the season in general, this is something that, you know, he's going to continue to probably want to do. He's played 41 games this season. At this point, he's gone over this number in the first quarter and 32 of those 41 for a 78% hit rate. This is just a continuing sort of trend that we're going to see from a dude who knows that his knees don't have 40 minutes in them in a row without sitting down for an extended period of time on the couch with ice all over his knees. So he's going to get it in where he can. And that's why he plays 12 minutes in that first quarter. I don't know if there's any point in, like, you know, holding him back for 7 minutes, 8 minutes in the first quarter so you can play more in the fourth. It's like, that ain't going to be how it works for him moving forward. Just can't hold up for that long anyway. So I'm going to go to a sort of, I don't want to call it ambiguous, but it's definitely off the beaten path of props here. And it's Cole Anthony over 5.5 points in this one. You have to take that on MGM. I don't think any other books have yet come out with his props as we're recording this on Sunday night, but 5.5 points. I love MGM for that, by the way. They give you the early sort of role player props better than any other book. I will shout them out for that. 5.5 points for Cole. Still get a little bit of plus money on that at 105 there on BetMGM. And my thing is once again, putting myself in the shoes of Jamal Mosley and going, I cannot possibly watch my team miss that many shots once again. I can't watch an NBA team that I coach shoot 36% from the field. And that's going to happen when you have Jonathan Isaac on the floor. Franz Wagner's not a three-point shooter. So you got another dude on the floor who's not a three-point shooter alongside Jonathan Isaac. Very, very hard to score in the NBA with two non-shooters on the floor. And I know Franz took six of them, but that they want him to, right? That's where they want him to shoot from, this Cleveland Cavs team. So with that in mind for Cole, I mean, look, he got 11 minutes in this one. You want to talk about spark plug off the bench, 36% usage rate in those 11 minutes. My man is shooting and not wasting any time with his time on the floor, which was shorter than he normally. I mean, he's averaging about 17.5. He's averaging like 22 minutes per game on the season. I think you dumb that down with a full lineup for the Magic and just automatically assume that's going to get watered down to like 15 to 17 minutes per game. But he saw 11, and I just don't think you can keep him off the floor for that long anymore with the shooter that he is and the way that they missed almost all of their threes. They were like 8 for 32 or whatever. So I think he needs to be out there to be that spark plug offense for them. And if you look at the numbers for him when he does normally play, look, when he took seven shots in 11 minutes with that 36% usage rate, he's gone over in he's taken seven shots this season in, I believe, 38 games. I want to make sure I have the right one. Yeah. In 38 games, he's taken at least seven shots in those games. He's gotten at least 6 points in 32 of those 38. So like an 85% hit rate when he's actually going to get those amount of shots, right? Even if he doesn't get the minutes, don't even worry about the minutes at that point. And when he does get 15 minutes, it's also much better numbers as well in terms of the hit rate for him getting 6 points for plus money, which, like, we know if he shoots the ball seven times again, I'm going to feel great about this bet. He's averaging 10 points per game when he does shoot the ball at least seven times. And now you see, like, with Jonathan Isaac on the floor, like, if he plays with the second unit, now you've got even less shooting. Like, there's just a lot more availability for him to be open for those shots, less shooters on the floor alongside him as well. At this point, it's kind of like he and Mo Wagner, honestly, as the dudes that you can actually rely on this and on the second unit there to get those points. I understand that, like, he's now playing against a few more starters because you're not playing bench minutes for the Cavs bench players nearly as much. So when he is in there, he's still going up against good defenders like an Isaac Okoro and that type of thing, right? But still, give him 15 minutes, give him at least seven shots, and I'll gladly take 6 points out of that.
Yeah, this is a good find. Yeah, Bet365 has also got the same lines up as MGM, just to give a fair share to them. But plus 165 for him to have two assists, two, and even money to just tack on one assist here and go 6.5 points / assist. Like, if you're banking on the Magic having some positive regression as a team, like, he's probably going to be on the passing end of a dime or two here. He averaged 3.1 on the road post All-Star break. He is facilitating that second unit, like you're saying, and they got to take a little bit of pressure off Paolo. Yeah. Who had been just, like, you know, controlling everything down the stretch for them in the regular season, and welcome to the playoffs now. Now 9 turnovers for Paolo in his playoff debut. So they got to have somebody else initiate the offense at times.
I really wish we would have thought of that, being like, yo, Paolo's going to be with the ball in his hands in his first playoff game. Let's get an over on the turnovers. That would have been a good look too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but always a little hard to predict how a guy's going to react in that spotlight. And I mean, we did mention, like, you know, the Magic and Pacers tightening up, the guys who have never taken shots in the playoffs.
Yep.
And yeah, they just bricked them all, both teams, yep, it looks like. But we're talking about the Knicks here for a couple more props. And OG Anunoby, under 19.5 PRA. I mean, mostly fading the points and assists here, but it's about 4 rebounds added to that for better juice. Because the guy is just not involved in the offense. Like, I mean, he is a fantastic defensive player. He still played 31 minutes in game one. But, I mean, he's losing a few minutes here or there because your guy Bojan, who you're going to talk about, has to give them some juice offensively. I mean, OG is a corner three-point shooter. The Sixers give up the fewest three-pointers in the league on the season and the fewest three-point attempts from the corner. Like, they're, especially when you have Batum out there, like, he is too savvy to lose his guy out there. And I mean, in game one, OG handled the second fewest touches of anyone on the team on offense. Like, only Mitch Robb, who was out there just to guard Embiid, had fewer touches. He had 4 potential assists. None of them wound up being an assist. He didn't even have a secondary assist. And that's kind of been the case since his return. He's averaging 0.4 secondary assists, just 2.6 potential assists, and only getting 22 passes a game received. That is 17% usage rate, and that's added up to 11.4 points, 3.4 rebounds, 1.4 assists. The rebound chances were not even very high in game one here. 6 rebound chances, whereas Josh Hart swooping in there for his 23 rebound chances. Your boy, a bit of a rebound hog, I think he would be the first to admit. And I mean, OG is not going to fight him for those. His job is to be out there and be another great defender for this Knicks team. And he's very effective in that role. He's just not doing very much on offense.
100%. Yeah. The corner three stuff is a big part of all this, to what you're saying. And I agree, like he's not involved in the offense. He's got to be catching those spot ups, to get in there and get it. And I don't feel comfortable with that, for OG in terms of any kind of over. I'm fully on board with that. I kind of wish it was a little bit higher because we've seen it a little bit higher, and I'm sure it's gone down like about a one or two in the PRA, line for him there, as he's not been hitting this quite as much, but still, I don't think you're paying a premium at all by taking an under on his 20 PRA total there. I'm going to close it out with the aforementioned Bojan Bogdanović, no relation to Bogdan, just so you guys know. But Bojan is at 9.5 points, and you can still get it for a pretty good number. You can take it at 10.5 for really good juice, or 9.5 you can still get for -132. I'm sure I'm not the only person playing this, and hopefully this is still around for you guys. But I think 10.5 is still an okay number, as long as you keep it to like -110 or better. I still think that's a really good number for Bojan. And what I'm looking for Bojan is, honestly, like, my first thought and why I was drawn to this bet, Nate, is because I'm a Knicks fan, and I was watching that Knicks game going like, I don't feel that comfortable with how much we are clearly relying on Bojan Bogdanović to take us through this playoffs on offense. Like, I do not care for the fact that our offense is like, there's nothing there for Jaylen. All right, what do you got, Bojan? Can you do it now by yourself? Like, I love the man, but I do wish that was Julius Randle in that spot of like, hey, we need a bailout shot, you know? Either way, he is kind of in that Julius Randle, like, yo, we need a bucket, you got this, you know, kind of thing from Tibbs' offense, which is just Jalen Brunson. But you know, the other thing is like Philly is very good against spot up shooters. They're very good at like maintaining, and that's why they're so good at defending threes. Boyan's not the spot up shooter at all, even when he's playing with Jalen Brunson. Like, he's the secondary ball handler, right? That's his role at this point. You saw him running the pick and roll a lot. That's actually how he gets a large majority of his points as well, for this Knicks team specifically. He wasn't doing that quite as much before he came over here, but at this point, like, that is a lot of what he's doing for this Knicks team, as you see, is the ball handler in the pick and roll as opposed to the spot up, which is where you want to be if you're going to be, especially some with that second unit. But I mean, 24 minutes in this last game shows you what they were relying upon him for. And that 23% usage was second only to Jalen Brunson on this team. Took 12 shots, which was tied for second with a couple other dudes behind Jalen as well, who took 26 and couldn't even get the 30 points as well. And that one for JB, because they're doing a great job shutting him down. And that is why they need Bojan on the floor at the same time as Jalen Brunson, as the dude that's like, okay, you can also break down the defense. He gets a lot of his shots from the free throw line, which is where the Knicks are trying to get to, not only to put Joel in foul trouble if they can, but the Philly will foul you and has a bad opponent free throw attempt rate for a reason. They're a fouling team much more than they let you get anything easy, which is fine. But He had that 127 offensive rating. He had 12 field goal attempts in that game. And honestly, he got well over the points because of the fact that he went 3 of 6 from deep. But he also shot 4 of 12 from the field overall, which I don't think is obviously normal for him to be at a 33% field goal percentage. That's something that he's obviously done much better for all season. Also missed 2 free throws, and he is getting to the line about 4 times a game on this Knicks squad, which I love to see because I always want those easy points. If he can get 4 free throw attempts, and I expect him to make at least 3 moving forward, if not all of them, on that low amount of free throws, now we're already basically more than a quarter of the way there, right, to getting the 10 points that we need for him in this one. And similar to how I've been looking at, okay, well, what happens when you give this man the time and the usage to get his? Well, he's played 12 games with the Knicks where he's played 20 minutes, and he played 25 in this last one, but he's played 12 games this season with them playing at least 20 minutes, and he has gone over in 10 of those 12 games when it comes to this point prop. You put that up to the 25 he was just at, and that goes down a few more games, but he's at 100% hit rate, right? He just needs the usage and the time. He's still a very capable player on offense, and I don't think there are that many good matchups for him on defense, unless you think that, like, you know, Kelly Oubre and Tobias Harris are good matchups for Boyan, but he's so crafty in so many different ways that I still feel very comfortable with him getting his shot off. It's in the mid-range where he shoots the most shots for this team when he gets those minutes. JB is shooting plenty of mid-range as well, but nobody else besides those two dudes is really taking it to the mid-range, and that is where Philly's defense is the weakest and the most vulnerable. So he's going to keep living right, kind of the reason that you don't like OG, right, and I don't either, to score points, because he's in the exact spots that this Philly defense is all hyper aware of. Boyan's in the no man's land for them, right inside of like 17 feet. And that's where he's going to keep hitting those shots from. So I like him to go like 5 for 12 in this one if he's going to take that many shots.
Yeah, I mean, he's the adult in the room, right? I mean, the two lines that jumped out at me is him and Deuce McBride. But yeah. I mean, that's kind of fishy. The books are begging you to take Deuce for 9 points. They're probably thinking he is going to cool off and not hit any of those 5 threes again. And I think you laid out pretty well why Boyan is somebody you can, you know, with a track record in the playoffs, somebody who can create, who can get into the areas he needs to score and not just like play off Jalen Brunson and hit threes if he's left open. He can get it done himself. And he has a lot more experience and a lot more versatile game than Deuce.
Yeah. Love you, Deuce. And I'm glad you brought that up because it's a correlated conversation. Like, I was also looking at Deuce going like, all right, which one do you believe in here a little bit more? And Boyan making his own shot and making his own way and having the experience to do this is definitely what I'm banking this on. So that is all the time we have for you in Play at Props as well here. Make sure to subscribe to that page, though. Also got Best Bets up in a separate video for you guys as we're bringing you each and every day now moving forward through this postseason. So until we see you next, happy betting.